This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you to our patrons at patreon.com/thetomeshow. Welcome to The Tome, D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner.
And I'm Tracy Hurley, and this episode, number 366, we're going to draw a card to determine our destiny, or maybe what our character's all about, as we discuss the Book of Many Things, Part 3.
I always like it when Tracy ad-libs the script. All right, we continue having a great panel of guests for these episodes. From our normal panel of a group of panelists, we have drawn the Rogue card. It is clearly the sneakiest host of Edition Wars out there. Writer for Tribality and more, it's Brandis Stoddard.
I am indeed so stealthy as to be totally unfamous. It's great. not infamous. No,
unfamous. The other regular member of our panel comes to us by way of the Sage card and brings with him good advice. He earned his wisdom over at Thaco with Advantage and writes for Gnome Stew and Beyond. It's Jared Rasher.
I got to be a sage this time, Brandis.
Congratulations, mate.
For some reason, I randomly decided to start using the cards from the chapters we're going to be discussing for the episode, which means...
Interesting time to start, but I would have been the fool in a previous episode, so I guess I'll graciously accepted it.
I learned from somebody named Brandis that the fool is not actually a bad thing. It's just the beginning of a journey.
I indeed start from a place of no wisdom. Unfortunately, I have not yet made it to the next card.
But that means that our special guest drew for us the Fates. She is the weaver of tales and a writer of destinies. She is a longtime friend of the show and fated to finally return. She wrote the Brimstone Angels novels, and you can catch her new series, The Books of the Usurper, the first of which, Empire of Exiles, we read for the book club, and the second of which we'll be reading for a book club soon. It's Erin M. Evans.
Hey, thank you guys for having me back.
Always. We've had way too little Erin Evans in our lives recently.
For sure.
Well, let's fill that cup up.
And today we'll fill our cup by talking about the Book of Many Things. This book is a bit of a collection of a bunch of different things, like the Deck of Many Things themed magazine articles. There's such a broad range of stuff that we decided there'd be a good opportunity to do a new format for the show rather than one episode to look at the new product. We're going to record episodes more often, and we're going to do a deeper dive into a handful of chapters for each episode. So for this episode, we're going to start with chapter 6 and see how far we get with the no more than 3 chapters.
Because that's all that some of us prepped for tonight.
So to start off, it's disclosure time. Brandis, Jeff, and I are working from review copies. Jared is not. And Erin, are you?
Nope, not a review copy.
Awesome. Paid.
So we've got two honest people here on the panel, which will be a nice counterbalance to us shills who got free stuff.
Guys, I'm a rogue. I don't know what you want from me. It's right there in the intro. It's purchase, beg, borrow, or steal, right?
That's right. Speaking of, our first chapter, chapter 6, is the rogue chapter. The rogue is about betrayal and hidden threats, unless Brandis has some insight from his knowledge of tarot that may be related to elucidate more information.
So, the meaning of the rogue card in the Deck of Many Things is right there in the chapter. You have that dead right. No room for argument because the text says so.
I just read the first sentence.
Yeah, for sure. So I was looking at the major arcana, and of the major arcana, the devil might be the closest. I'm not an expert. My wife is the expert in this house. I will say the themes that go on here show up much more heavily in the minor arcana, right? It's this kind of thing is a big deal in the minor arcana.
Okay.
And for people who don't know, each of the minor arcana are also their own contained story. basically going from ace through king.
What I'm hearing is we should have had your wife on the panel instead of you.
I thought I was super clear about that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's been super clear about that.
Probably, yes. Fair enough.
You got the fool, not, you know, sage of this house.
Fair enough. I guess we should try to get her on as one of our upcoming guests, I suppose. But if you can handle having two parents on at the same time, nobody watching the kids, I don't know if that's feasible.
Yeah, in-house microphones are a problem too.
Yeah.
Attentive listeners other than Jeff will find that we discussed this rather extensively in the first episode that's already come out.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, perfect.
And Jeff offered to buy me a new microphone, which is great.
I remember that.
That may have been a thing, actually. Yeah. Sometimes I say things like that. So we do have some Patreon money if people want to support the show. That's what it goes for, stuff like that. So the Rogue. We're going to get, what are we going to get? Some new, it's interesting because we get new magic item, like deck of card magic items in at least two of these three chapters. If we get through them all, it seems to be a theme. And so we're going to get a handful of new magic items. We're going to get Hero Destinies, which also feels like a thing that shows up in later chapters for this bunch. And what isn't in later chapters is we get our rogues gallery of potential villains to thwart us. So
that is where the rogue chapter went rogue.
That's where the rogue chapter went rogue. Yeah. So
and
I would just yeah.
Well, we get to what I want to say about those. Sorry.
What did you think, Aaron?
I was just going to say we start off our first homage to Gambit in this entire book here.
that was literally what I was going to say is that, and the first magic item seems to be a way to kind of play a low scale Gambit from the X-Men. It is a magic item, card sharps deck wherein you can throw your cards to do D8 force damage on a hit or cast the spray of cards, which is a new spell, actually introduced in a chapter, in the next chapter. So
now I want magic item flaws that make you deliver everything in a certain accent.
It's just mildly cursed deck that makes you speak with a Cajun accent.
It might be very cursed in my hands. Very.
I kind of find myself not believing in a player who gets this, not immediately doing that.
I mean,
like on their own without any prompting.
There may be a generation of players who haven't seen the 90s X-Men cartoon that have only read the comics.
But as of when we're recording this, tomorrow they can fix that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Although I don't know if the new series is going to feature Gambit or not. I haven't really been keeping up on it, but
yep. That's called the public service announcement, folks.
So
when I started reading this chapter, and sorry, when I saw magic card decks, I just need to talk about the fact that I was afraid this was going to be a magic tie-in. Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, the rogue chapter doesn't steal from magic, but the rogue chapter does have Gambit in it.
So it's still steals.
It's right there, folks.
Brandis.
I continue to find it interesting when they because this is not the first time we've seen this, but they're introducing us to a magical deck of cards that has various effects, and the effect depends on the random card that you draw, and they're using a standard playing card indicator and not giving the alternative of cards from the deck that they sold in the box with this, you know? Maybe because they just didn't want to figure out which of the cards counts as five silk robes. And
I also think some of that might be that they don't want to confuse people on what this card means. Like, this card means what it means. in the deck of many things, and we don't want to give it other values that will confuse people.
And I can see that super happening, because honestly, when I looked at this, initially it was like, are these variants of the deck of many things? That's very strange. But no, they're just all cards.
But there are some variants of the deck of many things later on.
Yes.
So we are going to bump into
But you don't throw them and they explode. That seems like it would be either a waste or...
Yeah. I think if you work hard and believe in yourself, you can make anything blow up.
That's the true tagline of D&D.
That's right.
In my game, any card that gets thrown blows up eventually, so... it's a material component for every fireball spell. It's a deck of cards.
That sounds like Wano to me.
I'm curious what you guys think, how you think the deck of miscellany would kind of play out. This feels like the kind of magic item I can see a player getting and then never knowing quite how to use. So what's the case for this, that it's fun? Like, what is the scenario that you as a DM build around, okay, I want this to be something they're glad they have?
Well, so you do get to pick the card from the deck. You can draw a card of your choice from the deck rather than it being random, which is what I would have maybe guessed, but it's a robe of useful items.
It was random. This would be expanded
out to more items.
And and you don't have to worry about being encumbered by having all these items.
Right.
There's a little.
Go ahead, Jared.
Oh, I was going to say, there's a little room also to tailor things because, for example, the three books written in common about random historical events, I know it says random, but it's very easy to say, oh, this just happens to be a story about exactly what we're investigating right now.
Hey, GM, if I spend that card right now, could we do it here?
Can we get some exposition, please?
Like, if you treated this as a magic item that gave you a Blades in the Dark approach to gear prep, that would be awesome as hell.
Mm.
That's true. I can see that. Although it's a lot, this is a pretty big loadout for.
Oh yeah. Well, but you're expending a magic item, right?
Right.
That's because the card permanently transforms. That's kind of cool. Like, is it a lot? And maybe you are stuck with half the deck you just never find a reason to use. Sure, absolutely. but no attunement, so it's got that going for it.
That's a fun meta goal. Like, I want to use every one of the cards in the deck of miscellany.
Yeah, especially if the DM is consciously kind to meeting you halfway.
Yeah, giving you space to like here's a weird challenge that's not solved by obvious means. How are you going to do it with 5 silk ropes?
Right.
3 spears, you say. Right?
The only way to convince the king is if you win the burlap sack contest. Only you had a burlap sack.
Oh, I like this as like a true milestone leveling thing in a campaign. If you can use every one of these things, I will give you a level.
I'm a little confused by the window.
The window. It's kind of weird.
But it's like a legit useful magic item. And if it's
but you're gonna use once, and now there's a window there. So whoever you're looking in on, they know you were here because that window was not there a minute ago.
Sure, but if I can just if it's a window, does that mean I can just break it and now it's like a portable hole that can never be moved? I just bypass the wall and walk through the window.
I mean, 5 feet wide, 5 feet high.
Yes, apparently.
Because you can look through the surface. It doesn't say what the surface is. So I think that's up to whether your DM is feeling adversarial or not.
Right.
It's bulletproof glass.
Usually the DM is me, so I'm trying to figure out what I would do.
is that it bulletproof? More entertaining? The glass is just as thick as the surface. 5 feet thick.
5 feet thick glass.
So okay. You can see through it, kinda.
Good luck breaking that. And also, yeah, seeing through it.
It's a Minecraft block of glass. Get wrecked.
So I guess the gist is...
they pull out a pickaxe.
I guess the gist is that we think that the Deck of Miscellany is a robe of useful items, but more fun. Is that sort of what we got to?
That's absolutely my read of it. Yeah.
And now I think it's going to, I'm going to have to put one together and it's going to totally be a thing in my.
There's also the very weird energy of, all right, so we've been shipwrecked. We have nothing but this deck that we found on the island. Okay. Like the MacGyver energy of engineer your escape from the island with only this deck.
Yeah.
One use per card would be amazing. I would write that adventure.
Yeah, I don't know what
that adventure right now.
I don't know what I turn into a raft here. There's not even an axe. I can't cut down trees.
Well, we've already established that it's using Minecraft rules. You can punch down the tree.
Oh, there you go. And you do have a shovel, so. And a hammer, a light hammer. So clearly the Deck of Miscellany wins the whole chapter, right? Is that our take? Are there any other?
I do like the Deck of Dimensions. I mean, that is just like a cool visual there, but also not as charming because there are things that aren't useful as part of it.
Other than the visual, what do you like about the Deck of Dimensions? Tell us about the Deck of Dimensions.
Okay, teleportation can be somewhat boring. You leave one place, you appear somewhere else. I like that this adds things to that. Like, you leave this card here, and later on, when you want to travel to that card, you know, you do so. I mean, there's a physical thing. There is sort of like, you know, magic sympathy, that sort of thing, which is kind of missing in a lot of D&D magic, and I kind of like that idea. And I like the visual of the deck just like fanning out into a circle and, you know, opening up into a portal.
So are you going to replace normal teleportation in your campaign with this deck?
No. I don't think anyone has ever teleported in the campaign that I am running right now.
Well, people teleport all the time in my game, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We were building a gate.
It's just D&D fast travel, right?
The weird potential of, I think someone else could pick up the card and move it still with marked card. So that's just, okay, we have to split the party. How are we going to solve this? Like, I'm going to go in there and then snap to you as soon as I have the thing. Like, that's big rogue energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually super useful, right?
It's
a split the party and then get them back together.
Yeah.
Nice little sleight of hand to put the card in some other person's gear so they get in.
Oh, rude.
You can't get into.
What? Scribe off teleport just got easy again? What's up?
Right. It's a perfect heist magic
item. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
We got to sneak this card into somebody's pocket and then we can teleport to wherever they are.
So I already did my whole thing about Chronicles of Amber Trumps, but I'm just going to put a pin in that again, right? There are cards that let you travel to the person whose image is on the card. This is sort of in that conceptual space of a teleporting card. Everybody loves that.
Yeah.
All right, so...
That sounds fun.
Heroes of Destiny, maybe? I think we're probably good to keep the pace going.
Yep, that's where I was going to head next. So this is an interesting little repeated thing that we see throughout the book. And there's it shows up at least, twice in these three chapters, where it's basically just character inspiration. Draw a card, look at this table, and pull some inspiration for your character, right? Or a background element or whatever. So, you know. Pull a card. You got the puzzle. You have been part of a riddle that leads to a great treasure, or you have part of a riddle that leads to a great treasure or momentous secret. Okay, cool. that's just a little bit about my character, right? And who's got the other parts and how do we find this great treasure? And so it's just a whole selection of, I didn't count them, but I'm assuming 22 of those.
The GM part of me wants to say I would much rather do this either in session zero or at the start of a campaign. Yep. I had plenty of, I didn't get too far into the campaign before I was like, oh, wait, they have an important thing that they're tied to now all of a sudden.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
I absolutely agree with that.
There's a part of me that could see replacing some of the various like bonds, flaws, personality,
traits, yeah,
ideals, whatever, with, I want you to draw like three cards and then we're going to consult different tables and tell you what they mean, since we have multiple tables that sort of do this kind of stuff.
So I've always like had in the back of my head treating character generation as a sealed draft, as in like Magic the Gathering sealed drafting, mm-hmm. And just using this as like snake drafting, where the first person draws, then you get to the last person, they draw twice, then doubles back, then the first person draws twice, and you do that till you run out of cards. That could be really fun with this. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to wind up with, you know, probably about four to five of them. And you don't have to use all of them, but maybe you do. Maybe you cobble together a story out of about that many. And that'd be interesting because you do have choices that you're making for sort of, hey, I have a cool idea for that one. I'll go ahead and grab it.
Right. But I also feel like there's like this table's all right. There's some interesting things here, right? But there's also some really interesting other tables. I might, you know, each pull is from a different table.
And
sort of build from there. So especially because I'm assuming that I feel like we've already seen a table like this before, and I'm guessing we're not going to stop seeing them after these three chapters since they keep coming up.
Well, and there's also a lot of just, okay, theme a campaign.
Right.
Right.
Yep. There is part of me, I am one session into my new campaign, two sessions if you include the session zero. And there is a part of me that wants to start my game on Friday with, okay, everybody pull a card and then find one of these charts to consult. I'm going to add some new information about your character that you didn't know, but it's okay because they're new and you barely know them. So, no, there's a lot of fun to be had with these tables. The next section in this chapter is the Rogue's Gallery. If I'm recalling correctly, in the Deck of Many Things, the rogue gives you sort of a hidden enemy. There's somebody out there now who hates you and is scheming against you. And this section of the chapter is kind of giving DMs a little bit more to chew on to help make that a thing. And so they give you a different sort of stat block for different tiers of play. So you have, you know, a different stat block for each tier of play. And then you've also got sort of there, you can randomly determine or select from a chart their motivation. Why do they hate you? There's some discussion about like how to integrate this new villain that hates you into your game, whether it be, that the card has warped reality, or in fact, maybe the card hasn't changed anything, but it's just revealed something that was already there, that there's this NPC that you've already met or that you're going to meet that despises you for whatever reason. And so there's some good advice there. And then I think there was a last section about like building their layers, building the layer of the villain who hates you.
Yeah, and I wanted to say, but I wanted to wait till we got to this one, because you guys were talking earlier about how you would do it in session zero, these secrets that come out. But the rogue in the Deck of Many Things is about altering reality. So it would be interesting to also say you do it halfway through and you've altered reality by pulling, mm-hmm. like particularly if I had pulled this mm-hmm. card already, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and using the Rogue Destinies table as the, like, as a, you run into a fate storm, let's say. Mm-hmm. That could be really neat.
Yeah. I could see, because I'm my current campaign is Wild Beyond the Witchlight, right? And there is a past, present, and future theme to the three hags in that adventure. Although I would argue that that time element, that time theme is like kind of there, but not really explored very deeply. But this could be an interesting way to explore that, right? Pull one of these random destinies when you're confronting the hag that represents the past. She has warped your reality and your past just changed. Now this is true about you that wasn't true before. You know, tell me more about that. That could be a lot of fun too.
But one of the things that I really like about this is I don't know that we get a lot of roguish Bane villains. Like rogues tend to, like roguish stat blocks tend to be like the person that is going to sneak up on you and stab you while you're looking at the boss. And I like that these are all kind of framed more as the villain. Mm-hmm. And I like that they spread them out one for each tier. That's really cool. And from a mechanical standpoint, I really like that they actually have traditional legendary actions and they aren't doing the weird reaction legendary actions that they've been trying to do lately.
Mm. Yeah. The you know, one per tier really reminded me of the episode we did on monster design. And you know, a lot of folks really talked about 4E's monster structures. Actually, it was our episode on 4E. Sorry.
Yeah.
You guys know what I mean. You all listen to the show. It's great. And like including one per tier keeps things, you know, engaged and involved. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that kind of thing continue. But the rationale feels especially necessary in this book.
Well, and there's definitely there's an element of that one per tier thing, and they go out of their way to make each one in each tier thematically different. Like the first one is relatively normal humanoid. The second one is a fae. The third one is some aberrant creature. And the fourth one is you pissed off an angel, right? Some celestial has come down from the heavens to come after you.
I mean, the way I kind of read that is you upset a god that is interested in intrigue or like that. Immediately that stat block actually made me think of like the Erebus Kale books. And, you know, you have someone like Mask that is sending his divine servant to get retribution on you.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
I can see that. So, but where I was going with that is like, on one hand, I appreciate the diversity. On the other hand, there's a part of me that's like, okay, but let's say I'm in the first tier of play. This comes up. I need a villain, but I'm playing a fae themed game or a divine themed game. But that option is overpowered for where I need to be. Right. Certainly the homebrewer designer DM of me is like, okay, great. So I've got the one and I can easily sort of tweak. I can use the appropriate tiered one and then just sort of steal a couple of more cosmetic or minor things from another one just to give it that flavor.
Right.
But they can't make a perfect book of this.
Right. They can't fit every possible purpose
exactly
in, you know, four pages.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing is that they should come out with more content in this vein.
That is what I am saying. I'm not sure what everyone else is saying, but that is for sure what I am saying.
Fair enough.
Maybe if there, we compared it to a magazine article. What if there were a? I'm just spitballing here. What if there were a magazine,
like a monthly magazine with a good number of articles, a chance to give new writers an opportunity to write in something official that's still looked over. Hmm. This is a really good idea.
That's speaking to me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They could just pick up their numbering right where, anyway, moving on.
honestly, they should have two magazines. One can be focused on like adventures and one of other things. And then they can thematically name it around the name of the game.
Go on.
One of the things I was going to say that I liked about this as well is that the regional effects on these made me think of something I've never thought of the entire time I've been running 5e, and that is giving your campaign villains regional effects that fade over time because you have done something to depose one of the villains in your campaign, and you can see the tangible change in what happens to the setting because the regional effect is there telling you why the setting is this way.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, regional effects are a cool thing that have been part of the game since the beginning that at least I have not really explored.
Potent toxins is rude. It is super rude. Oh, man.
Potent toxins.
Oh, Jesus. When members of the villain's organization deal poison damage while within 3 miles of the lair, they ignore the target's resistance to poison damage.
Oh.
Oh, God.
So,
some dwarves had a bad day, guys.
The Thieves Guild is just poisoning everybody, and they don't care how resistant you are, as long as you're nearby. That's hardcore.
Wild.
Yeah, that's harsh. I love it.
So one of the things I thought about with this chapter too, and I don't know how many people know about it. There's a game, Brindlewood Bay, that where you play older ladies that are part of a mystery club. And part of that is this reveal over time of this group that is probably working against you once you figure out that they're there. And I was going to say that I was interested in trying to bring some of the tips they have in that game to hear as you're trying to do the villain.
That sounds awesome.
I'm hooked. You run that game, I'll play it.
All right.
You probably just got me to hunt down a copy. That's what you did.
Awesome.
Tracy out here making sales.
Ching.
Do you get a cut?
No, Amazon, but I want
Amazon affiliate link. Amazon affiliate link. Yeah, show people.
So shall we move on to chapter 7, The Sage? No, not The Sage. Sage. As we've discussed, some of these titles have a "the" in them and others don't, and I can't quite figure out the rhyme or reason. So Sage is the card all about arcane knowledge, foresight, and skill, to read the first sentence again.
It also goes great with chicken and turkey.
Parsley, thyme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rosemary.
Yeah. Feeling it.
So you will be shocked to learn that the first part of this chapter is all about character options. And by character options, I mean one feat, which is basically you're a close-up magician who can, you know, do magic card tricks, and a handful of, what, 3 spells. This is where our spray of cards comes from. But yeah, no, this definitely feels a little bit like, oh, you want to make a character who's a close-up magic themed character? We have a couple of things for you. Right, I appreciate the cartomancer feat that you can take, that basically you get to use the prestidigitation cantrip as part of like doing card tricks in a way that, you know, the components of the spell are hidden and nobody notices you're casting spells. It's just, I'm doing card tricks as part of doing fun, weird magic things. Yeah.
So, are you saying you could antagonize somebody by doing close up card tricks?
I mean, you could definitely antagonize somebody by doing close up magic. Yes.
Since we've talked a little bit about the connection to the Rider-Waite tarot, the connection to the magician really stands out for this one. It's not the only one with probably some very strong connections, but that jumps right out at me. The magician is about stage magic and thus might have cards on the table in front of them.
Mm-hmm. The real magic, I guess, of the cartomancer feat is that you get to imbue one of the cards with one of your spell slots worth of a spell that you can then use an action to enact that magic, right?
Yeah, in my Tuesday night game, we played 20th level characters for a few sessions, and I had cartomancy, and I got to cast 2 ninth level spells in a day. It was OP as hell. Nice.
Yep.
That's one of the strongest feats in the game,
but
bar none.
But in my head, it's definitely I'm doing card tricks using the first part of the magic or of the feat. And then I'm like, is this your card? And then I hit him with a fireball. Because that's definitely that's definitely how the feet should be
used. That's the misdirection.
So it's the eight of D6s.
Yeah.
I draw fireball.
Fireballs all the way down. Then we've got our three spells: Spray of Cards, Antagonize, and Spirit of Death. What do we think of these spells?
I mean, anytime you can summon a Grim Reaper, I am for it.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the structure of summon spells we've had ever since Tasha's. And I mean, Reaper Spirit sounds awesome to me. I guess I'm down, you know?
So with a fourth level spell slot, you're summoning the Reaper Spirit. You're pulling your own personal Grim Reaper to come out and fight for you.
Yeah, Antagonize is trying to be Crown of Madness that is not just Crown of Badness, because Crown of Madness is powerful bad, y'all. Oh. But Antagonize is great. Antagonize is fine and good.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that because it's like it does a thing that doesn't completely ruin the person's day, but it does force them to do a thing, and then it does psychic damage, and I kind of like that structure.
And then the other spell is Spray of Cards.
Yeah, I mean, this has a lot of Jubilee energy.
Jubilee. Yep.
Since we're covering X-Men today, this is the X-Men trivia podcast.
I mean, this is clearly
this is clearly
the spell that has you take the deck of cards and do, hey, you want to play 52 card pickup, and then you
right then exactly force
damage them in the face.
How to lose,
I am, as we are talking, I have been trying to figure out how to make a sorcerer that would just be Gambit. So
that's right.
Well, you're a step closer.
Arcane trickster.
You have all the tools in your hands here.
And then this section finishes off with a table full of Heroes of Destiny, where you draw a card and it gives you some sort of character element, which I don't know thematically really how this is much different than the previous one, but I'm not upset about having another one of these and just being able to pick and choose which ones I think are more interesting.
There's a few that are flavored a little more towards spellcasters, like your book manifests as a deck of cards, which, by the way, is a really cool one.
Oh, I wonder if they're not broken down where there's one of these for each sort of type of
I think that's class. Yeah,
like teams, yeah,
right. Like the previous table is Rogue Destinies, this is Sage Destinies. Yeah, okay. We're doing the thing.
You're smarter than me, you guys figured that out. I got it just now.
When you guys make
computing power,
when you guys make characters, do you tend to use these tables like frequently, every time, not that often? I like to look at them for inspiration. I've always been curious. I obviously, I'm a writer. I play D&D on Dungeon Scrawlers with a bunch of writers. So this is the part we want to do by ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think only one of us I know of used a table. So I've always been sort of curious, like how widely are these sort of tables used?
Most of my players at least start from the table, and I'd say 90% of the time they don't roll. They pick something that fits their vision of their character off of the table. And then every now and then they're like, there's nothing really there that fits. Can I make this thing up? And the answer is always, yeah, go ahead. What's your character about? You know?
I think within semi-recent years, I have probably used the similar tables that were in Shadow of the Demon Lord more than D&D's. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I'm doing like session zero, I will actually like write four different questions that are kind of themed towards the campaign and have them answer that instead of the four things that are part of the background.
Yep.
And I don't have an answer for this one. But I just like the world building that can be in some of it though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I love tables like this.
I love reading them. I don't use them, but there is something about a really well-written one that makes the little machine in my brain go brrrr. like, that's such a huge part of, I've talked about this in Edition Wars, but why I'm such a huge fan of Strash Asimovic's writing. He does stuff in Band of Blades and Scum and Villainy that gets exactly that, and man, it just speaks to me.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Shall we move to the next section? Because we've got two more magic items. Yeah, two more magic items. Guess what they are? They're card decks.
What?
Whoa, tell me more.
So, but one of them I've actually played around a little bit with because I started my campaign with a modified deck of many things after our previous discussions on this book. And I took a lot of cards from the deck of many more things and then cards from the original deck of many things and sort of formed a new deck and figured out what it would mean and had each player draw a card that was tied to their character that they would find later on in the campaign. So I've played around with it. The deck of many more things is basically just, hey, do you want to put more cards in your deck of many things? Here's a bunch of more cards. If you bought the physical product that came with the deck of cards, it has the deck of many more things cards in it as well. So it's really just more of that, like a lot more of that. What is there?
I would like to have a very stern word with the dice structure of the table of deck of many more things.
Where you have a one-third chance to just roll again?
That's what I'm saying. Yep.
Yeah.
Let me explain how to structure it. You know what? Never mind. It's too much.
Yeah.
That'll sum up.
That sounds like it was not done right.
This is an excuse to once again say, though, the card art that is part of this product is just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love it.
I like it lots.
The other thing, though, that I like about the deck of many more things is it really does seem to be designed to be you can give your players a deck of many things and it will do minor bad or good things that do not completely collapse the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But for this, sure. If you add all of these cards, this takes your deck of many things from 22 cards to 66 cards. So it's a significant addition.
Which is,
yeah, but I would be a fan of just using these as a deck that someone found too, though.
Yeah. And you know, some of them are kind of, the good stuff is really immediately lastingly good. The bad stuff is sort of very transient in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like the pit. A pit opens beneath you. You plummet 3d6 times 10 feet. Take damage from the fallen of the prone condition.
You have precisely named the one I was looking at. Very, very well done. You had a 1 in 66 shot, and you nailed it.
Yep.
One of, perfect, right?
One of my characters, when they drew their card, drew the ooze, which is just like a gelatinous cube forms around you all of a sudden, right?
I like to picture it as the ooze appearing, the gelatinous cube appearing above you, and then just going splat, right?
Right, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to the moment my character hits that character milestone where their card effect is enacted, and all of a sudden they're like, "Hey, awesome! We've accomplished this great thing. Why am I in the ooze?"
So. Reading through those, though, it doesn't appear if it's too small, if you're in too small of an area. So I'm like, you need to pull your card in a closet.
In a closet, yeah. There you go.
Measuring the room where you're going to use the deck.
Right. Like, you actually have a space set aside in your house for this is my card pulling closet.
Yeah.
That's what my players would do. I don't know what to tell you.
The privy?
Yes. I do all my best poker playing on the Jakes, as everyone knows.
The hole's already there. It doesn't need to open up.
The other deck in this section is the Deck of Wonder, which is a card-based Wand of Wonder. Is that fair? Or no, this is the Deck of Wonder is the one that was... it's like people who tried to make their own deck of many things, but ended up with just weaker things. That's what it was. So it has Deck of Many Things sort of style effects, although they tend to be more minor and they are all temporary. They're all like for the next 8 hours, this is a thing. And then it goes away. So if you wanted a Deck of Many Things that wasn't going to be quite so potentially campaign changing, the Deck of Wonder is a direction to go.
It would be really sad to draw the Chaos card and be immune to something for the next 12 days and never run into that energy type.
Yep.
And I think one of the reasons they use a regular deck of cards for some of these is that there's nothing to say you can't have more than one of these types of decks or something in play at any one time. And you probably don't want to have a deck of many things for everyone.
I just keep reshuffling my deck of many things and reusing it over and over again for things. As per an earlier chapter, I have created tables to use the deck of many things for all of my random encounters for the entire campaign. And I've got a system to slowly incorporate more and more badness as it goes along.
Nice. I did notice in the deck of many more things, though, they go through that procedure that we talked about in the earlier episode where if you draw a card from the deck of many things, it doesn't do anything. You have to say, I intend to draw 3 cards, mm-hmm. and that's what activates it, and it actually causes it to trigger when you pull the cards.
The deck of many things doesn't do anything unless you intend to have it do something. There's an intentionality to
consent.
So you can't get hosed by being forced to draw a card or tricked into drawing a card. Shall we move on to chapter 8? All right. Chapter 8 is Fates. The Fates are all about rewriting the events of your life. Changing your fate. We start off with some character options. Specifically, a couple of backgrounds. There is the rewarded background and the ruined background. And the idea is something has happened in your life. Maybe early in your life, you encountered a deck of many things and something good came up. Maybe you ran into a bad thing and something bad came up. And so your life has been rewarded or ruined.
These are really interesting. I think it's a really interesting way to look at it, because I think a lot of the time we look at it, this is the end of a story, but it's kind of, at the same time, it's the beginning of another story. So it's an opportunity to kind of pick up a character at a different place in that arc and think about what would that be. I don't care about the mechanical stuff from that. Just what I pay attention to. I'm like, ooh, that's a good story. Because if you're doing this, like, do you want to find it again? Right. If you had this, you know, this rewarded background where something went really well for you, you know, and then maybe it kind of plateaus out and this is the only way things have really materially improved, you might be driven to seek another deck of many things and see what happens. Or you might be like, I am not touching that thing, right? I think it's really, I think they're both really interesting.
Since Aaron was not interested in commenting on the mechanics, I will do exactly that.
Listen, I know my lane.
Yeah.
And you spoke well on it. I only mean to say that, you know, I'm ready to do the other thing, which is to point out that this is, you know, more backgrounds that give you feet. It's a feat from a very constrained set, right?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a new unique feat like we see in Dragonlance, right? But it's very much still the space of leading into the revision. You're going to have that starting feat.
Clearly, Wizards has made a decision, and they've been making this decision for years now, that backgrounds should be more mechanically powerful than they were when the game first came out. Because these backgrounds, by granting a feat, are objectively more useful than every feat in the player's handbook. Or every background in the player's handbook, I mean. So that's definitely a thing. And that may be the direction things are going. And ultimately, I guess, you know, people have a choice as to what they want to take for their background. So, or DMs have the ability to say, actually, we're not going to take backgrounds from this book or whatever to suit their games. So that's a thing, right? But definitely DMs need to be aware that, like, players' handbook backgrounds are not the same as later source backgrounds that grant feats. And so, I don't know, maybe one could go back and redo or modify all those original backgrounds to make them more useful again. But ultimately, we're a short period away from getting a new revision of the game anyway. So it seems like that's likely the way they're going with it as it is. And as is oftentimes the case, I continue to not be on board with calling what's coming up a new edition yet, because we don't know how different it's going to be and what it is. As is often the case before a new revision and the products right before the new revision, they're leaning probably into the direction that they are going to go with the new revision of the game, in order to make this book more useful when the new thing comes out.
I do think the feats that they chose for both of these are very thematic to the story that the backgrounds are telling. The other thing that's interesting to me, and this is just my dumb brain that likes to categorize things, it is neat that these are both kind of story conceptualized backgrounds versus some of the detail oriented backgrounds. Like, you know, this isn't you are a soldier. This is you could be a soldier and be either one of these things.
Right.
And we do have some of those already in the game. Things like Haunted that came up in, you know, Van Richten's. But it's interesting to me. Like, you have that more concrete, this is very much who you are. And then you have this is what your story is. And those are both evident in different backgrounds at the moment.
This is your noun, this is your adjective.
Yeah, like these don't say anything about what you do when you're not adventuring, which is one of the core pitches of backgrounds otherwise. And it only kind of talks about who you were before you adventured in terms of, like, things you actually did. This is just sort of your outlook on life in a lot of ways. And so it winds up being a lot like they weren't the kits. They were the, like, personality archetypes, from the Complete Fighter's Handbook back in second edition. And they had the same for, I think, wizards and priests, maybe thieves, but then they totally dropped that for a lot of the other.
Yeah, I think the first four kept that up, and then they kind of scrapped it after that.
Well, and there's
offered a lot less than one might wish.
There's definitely not, like, these backgrounds don't have a "this is what you're doing when you're not adventuring," but they do have that backstory element to it, right? Rewarded definitely has a story to it. You are a down on your luck individual, and then something happened, some event occurred. It may have been you drew a card from a deck of many things and got a good one. It may have been something else, some stroke of fortune, and it turned your whole life around. And that's informing a lot of your backstory, even if it's not discussing, like, what your occupation is or was, right? So there's definitely a lot of that. It's not just my disposition or my outlook. There's backstory there, or at least seeds of one, and then you can fill in the details, which is all the backgrounds ever gave you anyway.
Very true.
So are we ready to talk about a table where you draw a card and it gives you a heroic tie? It's another one of those. And that's the next section. It's all just heroes, more Heroes of Destiny. And it gives you a bunch of
new this is for,
these are the divine ones, Jeff.
Yep. Oh, okay. It says so in the text right there.
Got it. I'm not a very good reader.
Yep. If you read all the words, sometimes you get different things from it.
Man, after grad school, I don't want to read any of the words. Audiobooks.
Love you, buddy.
All right. So any particular thoughts about this table of Heroes of Destiny?
I kind of like random backstory things that slide in that, hey, you were dead and you came back before we ever started your story.
There's definitely some great stuff here. This is, I see some good solid ideas that I could absolutely hang a character on if this were either randomly assigned or I just was stuck, right? Which I've been known to get.
Yep, absolutely. I am definitely toying with the idea of pulling out these tables at my next game. I always start every session with an opening question to dig into sort of some role play or the background or whatever. And since it's only session two, and there is an unexplained 8 years in their backstory between session one and session zero, I'm kind of tempted to like pull one of these cards. Okay, that's a thing. Tell us about it. That's your opening question this week, you know, and building from that.
Do you have that player that always plays the orphan? But give them this. Let them draw a card.
There you go. There you go. All right, then the last section of this chapter is treasures. So we have more magic items. Boy, it's a good thing there was that random table in, what, chapter three or four that detailed where all of the magic items were in the entire book.
That's right.
This continues to be a book that screams, boy, I hope you have D&D Beyond, where everything is searchable.
So the first weirdest thing in this to me is that the Fate Dealer's deck is usable as a holy symbol for various deities like that. That wouldn't have been in the first three things I thought of for what a plus X magic deck would do. But
It's also interesting that it's or holy symbols of various deities with no guidance of like what those various deities might be or what kind of deities might be using.
I get this for like Mora, but I don't quite see like a follower of Torm saying, I am so devoted to duty that you will now look at my cards.
Right. Like I say this with plenty of love. There's a lot of sort of new age religion thing going on here.
Sure.
Right. And maybe that's part of where they're coming from. That could be kind of cool.
Mm. That right? could. I just think various deities could have used a parenthetical to be like, such as those that are that personify luck or whatever, fate or whatever.
There is a section though at the very beginning where they talk about gods that are associated with fate in different settings.
They do.
That's a little bit of a guideline for that too. I did think it was interesting that they list no religions from Eberron in that, which was kind of strange to me.
Well, the Eberron gods aren't real anyway. Isn't that like a core conceit of Eberron?
Still have followers.
I mean, what will Jeff prove it?
Fair enough.
So I also love the House of Cards for just the really big Wonderland energy.
Yes.
Right.
That's like, your Alice in Wonderland item.
That should go straight in Wild Beyond the Witchlight, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it could. Yeah.
It also reminds me of a lot of early D&D magic items where it's like, this is a common turn of phrase and we are going to make it literal.
Absolutely. I've got one of those books on my shelf. Let me see if I can find it. Anyway. Oh, yeah, the Book of Marvelous Magic. Yep. That one is the most guilty of that. Right?
Yeah. Now I got to figure out how to give my early
DSR in a super goofy mode.
You're right. I got to figure out how to make a House of Cards fit in my game now.
Yeah. Then after that, we get the Supernatural Gifts.
Yeah, which I actually like.
I love these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very tempted to, because they're all like a charm of whatever, and they're all sort of charmed, mostly charms associated with one of the cards in the deck. And there is definitely a part of me that's tempted to rather when they get that milestone in my campaign where they the thing from their card plays out and they get the effects of it or whatever. Now I'm tempted to instead give them this charm. Because it's not, I have to go back and check to see if any of those the cards they drew would actually be campaign shattering anyway. But there's some potential here to represent that it's a positive, so they're not going to get burned for it. Even the negative cards are generally positive supernatural effects. There's some interesting things to be done there, and I got to figure out how I'm going to integrate it because I like these charms.
The other thing really that gets me is
a lot of these are. Oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, this is one of those things that in hindsight, I kind of wish things had gone differently since 2014, because this is one of those neat things that was in the Dungeon Master's Guide, and then we didn't see it a lot, and then it kind of starts showing up again now. I would have loved to have seen a set of supernatural gifts in, like, every setting book that came out, you know, just that's flavored to that setting, or, like, you know, for any book that had a theme, like, you know, Bigby's and Fizzbands.
Yeah. I mean, Descent into Avernus is the first place that really brings them back, and is great. That section is actually super strong.
Yep. No, it's happened both times I've run Descent. It's been a thing. All right. So that is the end of chapter 8, which works out well because we are also about an hour into recording. So we did it again. 3 chapters in 1 hour's time. any last thoughts on these 3 chapters? Anybody wants to share? Then I'm going to call it the end of the episode.
A lot of fun stuff.
All right. I want to say thank you to all of our panelists tonight. Aaron, thank you for being with us. If people want to find out more about what you're up to or maybe go out and buy all of your wonderful books, where would they do so?
So you can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Aaron M. Evans. You can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers every Monday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for concentration check, co-writing space. You can come get some Pomodoro sprints done with me. That's also the channel for my recent actual play that I DM'd, Fearful Symmetry, which just wrapped up about 2 weeks ago. So if you want to check out the VODs, they're all up there. They're on YouTube. My books, Empire of Exiles, is a pseudo locked room mystery in an epic fantasy setting. So if you like Brimstone Angels, it's got lots of found family, lots of people who aren't exactly human, and lots of twisty puzzles. That one's out and available. Relics of Ruin, the sequel, which is an equally twisty mystery with skeletons. Say that 3 times fast. comes out at the end of April. And I have one more book coming out this spring, middle of May. RuneScape, The Gift of Guthix, comes out. My first non-Forgotten Realms tie-in novel. And one last thing, you can check out my podcast, Writing About Dragons and Shit. New episodes go up on Wednesdays.
I do enjoy that title.
Writing I have a little Dragons practice with that one.
Perfect. Brandis, where can people find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky at brandisstoddard.bsky.social. I write for tribality.com. My personal blog is brandisstoddard.com, and my Patreon is brandisstoddard.
And Jared, what about you?
All right. Well, you can find some of the reviews that I write on Gnome Stew. You can find other reviews that I write on whatdoiknowjr.com. And you can also listen to me and my friend Ange on our D&D podcast, which is Thaco with Advantage.
All right. And I also want to say thank you to those of you who support us by being patrons over at patreon.com/thetomeshow. That allows me to pay the bills and someday upgrade Brandis's microphone.
Well, come on, folks. I'm hurting here.
If we get 2 more patrons in the next month, I will buy Brandis a microphone. How about that?
Admittedly, what actually happened is that my wife accidentally threw out the cord for my snowball mic.
Oh, so you just need a cord. You don't even need a mic. That's easy.
Brandis, why did you tell him that?
Well, if there's still some money left over for Jeff to buy himself an ice cream after he buys me a cord, then I guess we're good.
And then, Jeff, do we still have an email?
We do. Yes, no. The email address got hacked like last Wednesday, and I didn't realize it until like Sunday. I just didn't notice that I wasn't getting emails. And I didn't notice it until I tried to get on Facebook and found out that I had been locked out of my Facebook, which uses the Tome Show email address. That was about 2 hours of my Sunday of getting all my accounts back, but it is functional again, yes.
All right, awesome. So if you would like to help Jeff know whether or not he's getting email, send more email to thetomeshow@gmail.com. You can find us on social media, so you can also tell him that he hasn't replied to your email. I'm Sarah Dark Magic with an H on most of social media, including Blue Sky. And Jeff is at Squatch, S-Q-U-A-C-H.
And that is episode 366, where we drew our third card from the deck of many things. In this episode of
The Tome. I'm on the wall.